We've got another twist and turn in the bonkers story out of the state of Virginia. We know the governor, Ralph Northam, is involved in hot water because there was a picture that unearthed itself from his medical school yearbook that had a picture of someone in blackface and someone dressed as a Klansman. He says neither one of them is him, but it showed up in his slot on the yearbook. So then people started shifting their attention to the lieutenant governor after a number of politicians called on his resignation. The lieutenant governor is a guy by the name of Justin Fairfax, who many people think will likely be the next governor of the state of Virginia.
He would step in if Northam steps down.
That's right.
Then the attorney general
is next in line.
He called for Northam to step down, but...
but he himself has acknowledged to posing for pictures in blackface. So you've got the attorney general who's in a blackface controversy. You've got the governor who's in a blackface controversy. And in between them, you've got a lieutenant governor who happens to be black, who's been accused by not one but two different women of sexual assault.
Two women of substance, certainly. They seem to be very credible women. I don't know about the story, but they're credible women.
These allegations have not been proven, and he has very emphatically denied both of them, but there are two separate allegations from two different people.
Yes.
One of the accusers says that she was not only sexually assaulted by the lieutenant governor of Virginia at Duke University, she claims she was sexually assaulted before that by a player on the basketball team who turns out to have a lot of ties here to Southern California.
Well, interestingly, when that story first came out, it was having to do with a player on the 1999 Duke Blue Devils basketball team, which was a very famous basketball team, because on that team were Elton Brand, who was a big star here and now runs the Philadelphia franchise, and Shane Battier, one of the great citizen ball players in the game, and Corey Maggette, whom we know here very well from his years with the Clippers, and he is a commentator with them now.
That's right. In fact, I was watching him last night. The Clippers were in Minnesota, and I'm trying to watch as many Clipper games as possible because it's Ralph Lawler's last season as the play-by-play guy for the Clippers. And if you've never heard Ralph Lawler call a game, you're
one
missing
of the best.
Out.
Absolutely the best.
Yeah. And Corey Maggette is on the same broadcast as Ralph Lawler.
That's right.
And then this morning, we're going through the news and we're listening to the top of the hour news. And Jeff Whittle talks about this story and Corey Maggette's name pops up. Now, Corey Maggette is denying these allegations. Fox Sports, who is his employer, he doesn't work for the Clippers anymore. He works for Fox Sports.
Looking into it.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And I guess they're going to allow him to continue to work until they've resolved whether or not he's guilty of what he's been accused of.
Mm-hmm.
And this has to put employers in a very odd place.
Sure.
Because you've got Ralph Lawler's last season as the broadcaster for the Clippers. So you're bending over backwards to make sure that all of these telecasts are as special and memorable as possible. And you want people to remember the broadcast because of Ralph Lawler's achievement and his career as a broadcaster for the Clippers and living in Chick Hearn's shadow and Vin Scully's shadow, because we've had so many amazing sportscasters in this city. We really have been blessed. You don't want this to be the story if you're Fox.
Not for Ralph Lawler, certainly. And for those of us who are Ralph Lawler fans, you don't want anything to get in the way of this.
That's right. Yeah. Joining us to talk about all of this and much, much more is criminal defense attorney who you can get on Twitter at Lou Shapiro. Lou Shapiro, good morning, Lou.
Hello, Lou.
Good morning, gentlemen. Look, full disclosure, I'm a Lakers fan, so I don't know if you want me commenting on, you know.
Hey, Lou, full disclosure, everybody's a Laker fan.
Okay.
Even Ralph Lawler. What do you make of these allegations against Corey Maggette? And, man, can this Virginia story get any stranger?
You know, we're seeing another person, high-profile person, getting what they say, quote, Kavanaugh. We're in this age now where people's history is starting to haunt them. And it really causes a lot of, I think, mixed feelings for many people, because on one hand, we're all used to the statute of limitations, right, in a court of law, which basically says, you know, you have a certain amount of time to come forward. And once that time has passed, you know, the person is entitled to move on and have closure. Because the idea is, how can you defend yourself from something that's happened so many years ago? I mean, that's what the Constitution is set up for due process. But then you have the court of public opinion, which doesn't, evidently, right, doesn't have the statute of limitations. So people like, you know, Corey Maggette wakes up to this news, and he says to himself, how do I defend myself from something that allegedly happened 20 years ago? And it really hamstrung someone in the court of public opinion to defend themselves.
What did we learn from the Kavanaugh hearings? Because you referenced his name, and there are more than one connections between that case and this one. The attorney for Justin Fairfax is the same attorney that Brett Kavanaugh hired when he was going through his confirmation hearings. The attorneys that the accuser has is the same attorneys that the accuser in the Kavanaugh case had. And the arguments that we're hearing are very similar in tone.
Right. And you even saw, and this kind of didn't get reported so much in the Kavanaugh case, one of the accusers actually ended up recanting and saying that she made up that story. One of them. That's not to say everybody was lying in there.
Right. And she wasn't the major accuser in that situation.
Correct. Correct. But the point is, you know, at that moment, everything made a difference to that man in terms of whether he was going to get to that next level on the Supreme Court.
Well, so, not only would he get to the next level on the Supreme Court, but how he would be judged in life by the public, whether he got on the court or not.
Precisely. And that gets us back to this ultimate question is, how does somebody from 20 years ago today defend themselves in the court of public opinion? One of the things that maybe Maggette can consider doing is a polygraph test, right? He can go to an expert, have these questions put forth, get a report, and that report can be released. But short of that, I mean, do you remember where you had lunch last Monday?
No, but you would remember if you raped somebody.
That's true. But again, how does he prove to everyone else? He may know that he didn't do it, but how does he produce witnesses or videos or photographs or anything else that can counter that argument?
One of the things that we've seen pop up in the 2020 presidential election is not only are candidates being judged on their own activity and their own behavior as it relates to people who work for them, people who they work with, but they're also being judged based on how they respond when one of their employees is involved in wrongdoing. Kamala Harris has been involved in a controversy because one of her top aides had to step down and a settlement was paid out to an employee of the Department of Justice here in the state of California because he was behaving inappropriately. The governor of Montana has apologized because one of his employees at the Democratic Governors Association was terminated, and he went on to work for Mayor Bill de Blasio in New York, where he continued his pattern of bad behavior. I think maybe even Chuck Schumer as well. And so these politicians are catching all kinds of hell just for having people who work for them who have done bad things. If you're Fox Sports West and all you want to do is broadcast basketball games and send Ralph Lawler off with a great final season, what are you supposed to do if his broadcast partner has been accused of these things? But from your point of view, there's no way you can say, all right, they definitely happened or they definitely didn't happen, but you're going to be judged if you don't respond the right way.
I think what we're going to start to see is a turning point here. We're basically, you know, on the heels of the Me Too movement, and complaints are bringing high-profile figures down over the past couple of years. But at some point, and I'm not saying it's this Maggette incident, but I'm forecasting at some point an employer like a Fox, high-profile employer, is going to say, you know what, too many years have gone by, and we just can't keep losing one great broadcaster, one great actor, one after another to accusations that can't be backed up. And when that will happen, I'm not sure. But this may be that defining moment when the Clippers just say, you know what, it's 20 years. She didn't even go to the police. We don't even have a police report to look at. We don't have a rape examination kit to evaluate. Who knows if Duke even has those records or what records were kept. At some point, someone's going to say, we have to let this person move on, get past this, because there's just not enough there to bring them down.
We're talking to criminal defense attorney Lou Shapiro, who you can get on Twitter at Lou Shapiro. If the lieutenant governor of Virginia is forced to resign because of these allegations and his career is over and his desires to be governor never come to fruition, how much will that negatively impact Corey Maggette if they determine her to be credible in that particular case? But with Corey Maggette, if there's no definitive proof, they can say, well, if she was telling the truth here, she was probably telling the truth there.
And isn't, by the way, part of it, Lou Shapiro, you look at the woman who's making the charge. And by the way, we shouldn't judge it that way. But if the woman has a credible life and history and is a functioning citizen, doesn't that help her case?
Well, it's definitely something that human nature that we would intuitively take into account. But in a court of law, for example, a judge would say, listen, you've got all these credentials, academic accomplishments, professional accomplishments, but the law says that too much time has passed. So even if you're telling the truth, there's nothing we can do about it because the law says due process protections are afforded to an accused after some point in time. Take what? That to this. Sorry.
Go ahead.
No, but applying that here, it conflicts someone like a lawyer like me who's regularly using those due process protections and trying to say, well, not in a court of law, we take that person's word at face value.
Let's shift gears here for a second, because jurors in the El Chapo trial entered their fifth day of deliberations, which is lasting much longer than most people expected them to last. Their task is a lot more complicated than simply deciding, by the way, whether El Chapo is guilty. The jurors are weighing not only 10 counts against Guzman, including running a continuing criminal enterprise, firearms possessions, and the importation and distribution of cocaine, but also dozens of individual violations within those charges. Should we read anything into the fact that it's taking them so long to come back with a verdict, or is this just what happens in complicated trials?
You know, generally on the defense side, when the evidence isn't so good, the longer deliberations, the better it is. So I think in the defense in this case is not necessarily celebrating this, but I think they are having some comfort and then they put up a really good fight in light of the fact that their client definitely was not walking into the court with the quote-unquote presumption of innocence.
Do you think the jurors are worried that if they come back with a guilty verdict, their head's going to end up in a bag somewhere and their torso is going to be in a different city?
Well, that's a pretty straightforward question, Lou. What do you think?
I think it's a legitimate concern. I don't think that's affecting more than one or two, let's say. I think what is probably pervading that jury pool is the fact that, you know, you had 14 cooperating witnesses, but no video, no photography. I mean, think about it this day and age. It's a CSI effect, right? We come home, we put on Netflix or Amazon Prime, we're watching shows like this, right? And we're seeing things happen. And then you go to court and you're like, show me the video, show me. And all they're hearing from is compromised witnesses, witnesses that have cut a deal with the government to get a lesser sentence in order to testify against the accused. And that's why the defense attorney in the case very intelligently said in closing, if this is the best they got, how can you accuse my client?
Can I go back to sports for a moment?
Absolutely.
Yeah, the Cleveland Browns have just picked up Kareem Hunt. Kareem Hunt, who has, unfortunately for him, fortunately for us, video evidence of what he did in beating up a woman, kicking her in the hallway, etc. The Browns, of course, have made all the right sounds. They've vetted it. He's truly contrite. He'll probably be suspended for a few games. Is there hypocrisy here?
I don't think it's hypocrisy because in that case, I mean, at least that what the employer is stating is the person took responsibility, right? Fulfilled the domestic violence classes and basically paid their debt to society. And we are a forgiving and compassionate society. I mean, there is the element of expungement, even in criminal law, right? You fulfill your terms of probation, you get an expungement. You get to start anew. At some point, we do say, hopefully you've learned from your past, you're an improved person, and we're going to give you another chance.
Lou, we all agree to that, but how has Kareem Hunt truly paid his debt to society?
Well, he was convicted. He fulfilled his probationary terms, and his employer is saying, "What else can we ask of somebody
he may have paid his debt to the legal system, but to society. Or am I getting too philosophical here?
No. You're identifying the exact conflict that I think a lot of us have, which is if he did everything he's supposed to do from a court's point of view, why don't we honor that in mainstream society at that point.
Well, you know, I often say, and don't get mad at me, Lou, but once in a while, the law and justice happen to collide. Once in a while, but oftentimes it doesn't.
That's right. But it's healthy that, you know, we can have these kinds of discussions and talk about it openly.
You're absolutely right. Yeah.
Lou Shapiro, defense attorney, thank you so much for stopping by this morning. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Lou, and maybe Anthony Davis next year. Okay.
I mean.
Okay.
And you can follow Lou on Twitter at Lou Shapiro.